Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kurula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. This is your host with the most, Nikki Kurula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We've got an amazing musician, artist, guitar guru. You really are a guitar guru. Mr. Jody Hill. Say hello, Jody.
Hello.
All right. Our studio audience loves you already. Look at that. Oh, take a bow. Take a bow. Yeah. And silence. I can just, at that, you know, sound of, at the drop of a hat, I can silence the studio audience. They're that obedient. How have you been, man?
I've been great, man. Very good.
So you are a guitar guru to me because you know so many years of guitars, pickups, styles, vibes. You've been playing. How long have you been playing? When did you start
picking up guitar? I started playing when I was 13. I'm 52 now, so yeah.
So let me ask you this. What was the moment of zen that made you go, I want to pick up a guitar and play?
First time I heard Johnny Be Good.
Wow.
Right on the radio.
Really?
Yeah, totally, man. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I know a lot of guitarists that say that specific song was it.
That's it, man. Yeah, it's magic.
You know? So you heard it and you were like, that's it. I have to just do this.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Dude, you know what? He's like one of the pioneers. I saw him play. I flew to St. Louis to see him play. And he was, you know, he was 82. So I knew it wasn't going to be
young
Chuck Berry. But he started playing and he was playing Johnny B. He played Johnny Be Good 3 times in the show. He had total dementia. And he was playing it in the wrong key. It was like not the show I wanted to see. But, you know, I'd seen B.B. King at 84.
And yeah.
He was still together, you know. But Chuck Berry kind of bummed me out that he wasn't all together because he was such a badass. I mean, an amazing guy.
Even out of key, he's a badass.
Yeah, he's a badass. He's like one of those guys where it's like he influenced so many people to play guitar.
Yeah.
And influenced so many styles, you know, within the blues and just rock guitar.
Yep.
I mean, the Rolling Stones' Satisfaction came from Chuck Berry, you know what I mean?
So, sure.
Good choice of a musician.
Yeah.
Do you remember where you were when you heard the record?
On the way to Grandma's house. That's where I did most of my music listening when I was a kid. You know?
That's awesome. Did you go through her record collection or your parents'
record It's just on the radio, you know.
Wow.
I was here and there. We always look forward to getting in the car and driving to Grandma's so we could listen to AM radio and...
And what did you say? You were like, I need a guitar. Can I get a guitar for Christmas?
It's like, Dad, you know, well, how does he do that? My dad play guitar, so, you know, it's like trying to pick his brain, trying to figure out, you know, what's he doing, you know?
And what kind of music did your dad play?
He's a big blues fan, but he's all over the place. He was a DJ, too. He DJed in Black Radio in Memphis.
Wow.
And so we had pretty eclectic record collection, you know.
Wait, did he know Dickie Phillips by chance?
Oh, Dewey Phillips.
Dewey Phillips. That's
totally, man. Yeah. He knew all
those guys.
That's
crazy.
Man. Yeah, he was good friends with George Klein, you know.
Wow.
Rufus Thomas ate dinner at our house.
What?
Yeah, it was cool, man. Yeah.
I remember you telling me that.
Yeah.
Did he come in with the socks, like pulled up to his knees?
No.
He was on vacation.
He was dressed for dinner.
That's awesome. Dude, really? That's crazy.
Yeah, it was great, man.
And was it just like a normal thing for you to have Rufus Thomas at the house?
Well, yeah, I didn't know any different, you know what I mean? It was just, you know, my dad being a DJ, I'd go to the radio station and meet all these guys. Now I wish I could go back because I would appreciate it. At the time, it was just...
Well, it's also like when you're that young, it's you know, whatever my dad's doing is not cool.
I was into
know?
Cartoons and whatever, you know, and it was just what my dad did.
So you grew up in Memphis.
Yep.
And you're 13 years old, and, you know, that's the city of the blues in a lot of ways.
Oh,
There's really like three or four schools, and that's probably one of the biggest. I'd say New Orleans and Memphis are like the biggest cities for funk and blues, you know? Sure. And Memphis really being the blues city, you know? Did you like sneak out of school and like go see blues music on Beale Street or anything like that?
No, I never really had to like do that. I mean, my dad would take us to shows, you know, and give me concert tickets and stuff like that.
Do you remember your first concert?
First concert was the Jackson 5 and the Commodores.
Oh, my God.
I was in
second
grade, yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
Was that your choice or was that his choice?
That was just the family's choice, you know. Anytime the Jackson 5 were on TV on the Johnny Carson show or something, they'd come wake me up, say, you know, come check this out.
Wow.
I love it. Yeah. The Osmonds, all that kind of stuff.
Dude, that just kicked open the door. It's like, okay, I'm going to be a musician.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it came even earlier than Chuck Berry, but Chuck Berry was, you asked when I wanted to play guitar, that was it. That was the thing. I've got to learn that on guitar, you know.
And that's not an easy person to, like, emulate, you know what I mean? Chuck Berry is, like, one of those guys where it's like, once you learn what he's doing on, you know, pentatonic scale, like, all of that, it's a little bit more intricate than most people would think, you know?
Yeah, it is. And I've seen so many people play that intro to Johnny B. Goode so many different ways, and I still don't think I have it exactly right. I'm pretty close, but there's little parts of it that I just can't get exactly dead on, you know?
What was your first guitar? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was a KSG copy.
Awesome. Yeah, man. You still have it?
I wish. No, I've been looking for it, like, on Reverb and, you know, eBay and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like a sentimental thing.
Yeah, people want a little bit too much for them now. If I could get one for under $200, I'd probably get one, but, you know.
Well, they were like, what, 30 or 40 bucks back in the day?
I think we got that in the amp for 75 bucks.
Oh, my God, that's crazy.
Yeah, on Beale Street, even.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it was a pawn shop on Beale Street.
So, growing up, I mean, you know what? I've never even known this side of you. Like, growing up in, like, around Beale Street, did you frequent that area a lot as a kid?
Not when I was a kid, no. We'd only go downtown like at Christmas time. They had like a big goldsmith down there that they would do the whole Christmas where you walk through the Enchanted Forest is what they called it, you know. So that was the only time we'd make our way downtown when I was a kid. When I got older, I started going to see shows on Beale Street and that kind of thing.
Who did you see, like, who was like a guitar slinger that you were just like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm seeing this guy in this small little venue on Beale Street?
I don't know, man. That's a good question, because the guy that comes to mind mostly is Little Jimmy King, and he's dead now, but he was awesome. We used to see him at the Daiquiri Works, his little daiquiri place across from the New Daisy Theater there, and he just played out on the floor, like you'd go get your daiquiri or whatever and sit at a table, and he just had a little Fender amp and a Strat, and he played upside down. He played the Strat upside down just completely backwards, you know,
like Hendrix style.
Yeah, and it was just amazing. He'd get right up in your face and play, and just, he was so smooth, man. So that was probably the best and most influential person that I remember seeing play.
How many times did you see him play?
Oh, all the time. We'd go see him, we'd go hang out till the show would start, till they'd open the doors, you know, just hang out in there, and just because it was free, you know, he played for tips. So,
and did you start a band like in your teenage years at all?
Oh, yeah.
What was the name of your first band?
Drove my mom crazy.
I'm sure.
What was the name of my first band? Melody Slaughter.
Nice.
Named after a girl I went to school with. Yeah.
I'm sure she liked that.
Yeah. I don't think she did at the time.
But now she's like, I influenced that band.
She's probably forgot about it. But she's a Facebook friend of mine, so I'll have to turn her on to the show so she can hear me say that.
That's right. Yeah. See? So what kind of style of music was it? Like rock and roll, blues?
Oh, we were just all like covering like Metallica and Anthrax and all the thrash bands that we were into at the time, you know.
So were you getting into like Injustice for All in high school, stuff like that?
Oh, Kill 'Em All. We would go to rehearsal and we just play that whole record front to back. That was our rehearsal, and maybe throw in a Judas Priest song or two, you know.
So when did you get into like metal, hard rock?
Metal and hard rock, probably more in high school, like 9th, 10th grade. I saw Iron Maiden when I was in 9th grade and got to meet Eddie and stuff backstage. It was cool. My dad, that was one of the perks from my dad being a DJ. He got me backstage to a few of the shows.
That's crazy.
It was wicked, man. Yeah.
And Iron Maiden back in the day, too. Like, I my lead guitarist said he just saw them recently. Yeah. And he was like, man, they're still one of my favorite metal acts of all time. They're just so heavy.
Yeah, they still deliver, man. And this was Dickinson's first tour of the United States. It was the Number of the Beast tour, so it was his first time over. And I saw him twice on that tour, but it was cool, man.
That's crazy. Yeah. So then when did you kind of start writing music? Was it in that phase when you were in the high school band? Were you doing stuff independent of the band? Were you kind of...
No, not at all. I always wanted to write music and I always wanted to record, but this was 81, 82, you know, and recording equipment just wasn't easy to come by and definitely wasn't, you know, it was expensive.
Yeah.
You know, so it wasn't like today where you can go online and buy a freaking...
I remember using a 4-track and I loved
using it. That's what everybody had, but I couldn't even afford a 4-track at the time, you know, so it was just... I needed to get some equipment. So it wasn't really until much later that I started buying recording equipment and doing that. But that's what I started on, was a 4-track, but it was more like 89 or 90 or so before I started working with that.
I remember getting a 4-track and it was like, you know, it was like a medal of honor, like, because it was a gateway. I used to travel with it. I used to love recording anywhere I could just because I valued it so much. So I took it everywhere. Now looking back, I'm like, man, that was kind of obnoxious to take it everywhere with me, but it was such a great tool, and I was so excited to be able to multi-track.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, it was just the best toy ever, man, for a musician.
So you graduate high school, and then where did you kind of like start exploring more music? Because you're pretty well-versed in a lot of styles.
I don't know. I mean, I've always explored music in different ways. I've always had friends that, you know, would turn me on to different things, and, you know, frequented record stores and just always looking for cool stuff. There for a little while, though, out of high school, I just kind of gave up on guitar and got more back into listening to music, you know? I just got burnt out or something. I didn't have any direction, you know?
What do you mean you got burned out?
Well, just, you know, every band that I played in at the time were cover bands. Nobody wanted to do anything original. And even if they did want to do original, they wanted to do it in the style of something else, you know, as opposed to actually just trying to
come up with a style.
Yeah, mix their own influences into their own style, you know. So I just was like, well, I'm not going to spin my wheels. I'm going to just... I didn't even have a guitar, I don't think, for a couple of years. I just got rid of it and, you know, just listened to music, hung out with friends and saw shows and delved into that. And that's important to me now. I think that's as important to me as writing, is going
still
to
is
see
for me.
Stuff, you know?
Still is for me. You and I share that.
New music, you know? Yeah.
I think that's so important. I think a lot of musicians, even if they're like great players or great performers, sometimes they stop doing that. And I just like never want to. It's right. Like, because it's like there's a sense, you always get a sense of humility when you see an artist, because you see this great, well-tuned oil machine of some sort that's rehearsed and it's got tracks and got songs, and it makes you want to play. That's the other part of it. It does inspire you. And then you also just like reflect on how great music is. It's just such a, it's such a great process to see music, because that's, at the end of the day, that is what it's about. It is about seeing and hearing music live. It's about listening to records. It's about making music too. That's like the third part of the prong. I'm sorry that you went through that when you were just frustrated with people, I'm sure.
No, it was a great thing. It wasn't really a negative thing, and I didn't think it was a negative thing. I just thought, you know, I've been kind of beating a dead horse or something, you know what I mean? Like trying to force something to happen, and it's like, why am I doing this?
Right.
You know, music's something I should enjoy.
Yes.
You know? And so...
Well, it sounds like you got like more into the tinkering of guitars, too.
Yeah, well, I was always into that. I was always like awe-inspired by the guitar tech in Memphis that I went to. I would always take my guitar to him. It's got Tom Keckler, and he was amazing, man. I just always thought he was just the coolest dude, you know.
Because he was an encyclopedia of guitars, like you are now, man.
He was an encyclopedia of guitars, and he just seemed to have the coolest job, man. I was just always... You know, I was always concerned about my career, you know, and what I was going to end up doing. And it just kind of, I fell into it, man. I didn't search it out. But after I fell into it, I realized that's kind of what I always aspired to be anyways, you know. Always,
right.
I want to be around musicians.
I always want to be around instruments.
Instruments, yeah. Right. But musicians too. And you get so many different, without having to try to collaborate with people, you know, just, you know. Talk and hear everybody's different ways of perceiving music, you know, and how they get into it. Everybody's different.
And you started working at Gibson. When did you start working at Gibson?
I started working at Gibson, 2001. and worked there till about 2008.
What was the coolest thing you learned as a guitar, like learning the guitar intricacies of making guitars or pickups or anything? What was the coolest thing you learned at Gibson?
The coolest thing I learned, probably, and the most specialized thing for sure, was how to hand roll the necks.
Mm.
They had this big upright sander that you would, each block was contoured to specific necks, you know, and design. So you just had to take basically a rectangular piece of wood with a fretboard glued to it, and you just shape that neck to the right specs, you know, the 12th fret and the first fret. And you just do it by hand. And it was, I've always loved working with my hands and sculpting and that kind of thing. And it was like that. And it was very zen. Like, it took me a while to learn it. You know, it wasn't an easy thing to learn.
Of course.
It took a while to get the feel of it. But once you do, it was very kind of zen like, where I could do it with my eyes closed.
Wow.
And it just felt great. It's a cool thing.
And would it be like, would you pick up the neck of the guitar and kind of like feel it?
Oh, yeah,
as a musician, because you played?
Yep. Yeah, well, you feel, but you check them with calipers and that kind of thing, make sure the measurements are right, make sure it's even, you know, make sure you didn't get too much over on the edges, you know, and get into the binding. It had to be, shoulders had to be right, you know.
What an art form. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, it was. It was very, you know, gratifying like that.
And also the cool thing with, you know, making guitars and just kind of like being a part of that process, you never know who's going to be playing it.
No, totally.
That's like exciting. You
that
know?
And also now that I'm teching, I've lived in New York for 8 years and then I just moved out here 3 years ago and I've been teching all that time and I run across guitars that I actually worked on, you know, that I actually build.
Seriously?
Oh, yeah, yeah. One of the first ones went in New York was Joe Piscopo. He has a Lucille that I worked on.
Oh my God, you know, you just gave me chills, man.
So I told, you know, I looked at the serial number. I was like, yeah, dude, I helped make this guitar. And so he always brought it to me, you know, to work, to set it up. And stuff.
That's wild.
And that happens all the time, yeah.
Do you know what serial numbers? Like,
yeah, it's dated, you know.
What numbers? I want to know. I want to get this on tape so I can I can reference them.
Well, in the time that I worked there, it was the first and the fifth number are the year. And three numbers in between that are the day of the year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you know just by just looking at the neck.
Because
you're like, okay, this means this. I was there during that time.
Yep, exactly.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And on some of them I can tell what job I was doing, you know, because I hand rolled the necks from like 2003 to 2006. And the last couple of years I ran a CNC machine, so I can narrow it down.
That's crazy. You know, like on those old like 50s Strats that are like $100,000, the guy who did the necks, he would actually, he'd write his name.
Oh, yeah. A lot of guys did that there too. Man.
Did you ever do that?
No, I never did.
You should have, dude.
Yeah. No, looking back, I should have.
It's like this. It's like when you work on an instrument like that.
I have seen other guys though that have done it, and I've taken, you know, the pickups out or whatever and seen their initials.
Because thing is, like, I never knew he did that until I saw like a Pawn Stars, and some guy brought in his grandfather's Fender Strat, and he's like, I just want to see how much it's worth. And they brought this like specialist in, and he was like, well, this guy's signature is in it. It takes it up like five times what you think it's worth.
Right.
You know, so as soon as he saw the signature, he's like, dude, it's worth like $75,000. So like the crazy thing is, you know, those little things are there for, you know, a reason that you don't really understand sometimes. So you know what? Next time.
I know.
You know what?
Yeah.
Now, have you ever thought of like making your own guitars or like just building your own?
I mean, the thoughts crossed my mind, but I'd probably never do it. I've got a buddy, Josh, that works in Nashville. He worked with me at Gibson, and he does that. He's really great at it. If I ever wanted to get into it, I'd probably go work with somebody like him that's doing it already. He was the engineer at Gibson, and he has his own CNC machines and stuff. And, you know, I could help him out a lot, I think, you know, if I ever wanted to do that. But I don't think I'd want to. It's an investment, and it's super highly competitive. You don't really make – it's hard to make money doing
it. Well, it's also, like, very time-consuming, too, because it's, like, just shaping the guitar is one part of it, then staining it and, you know, like, all of that, then putting the electronics.
Oh, it's – yeah.
But if I gave you a block of wood and I gave you some pickups,
oh, I could make
a guitar. You could just make, you could make a guitar.
I could.
That's an amazing like tool that you have. That,
well, I didn't say I could make a good guitar.
No. I'm sure it'd be good. I mean, honestly, like you learn. You learn from all the master craftsmen. Just being in, you were one of them. You know, and I've been to that tour. I've done that tour at the Gibson Factory.
You probably saw me there. I think we talked about
that. Yeah, that's right. That's right. It was an amazing place. It was so big, and it was just like amazing to see all these guitars, and they just told you how, like, the, you know, the history kind of paved the way from, you know, every kind of acts.
Yeah, I've been working at an art supply store for 10 years before I went to work for Gibson, and one of the guys that was working at the store with me had started at Gibson. He's like, Jody, you got to come check this place out. It's awesome. So I told my wife, it's like, you know, I want to check it out, you know, and see, maybe I'll switch jobs. I really liked the job I was at, you know, but I'd been there 10 years, just felt like I'd kind of run its course.
Right.
And so I went down, and yeah, just the minute I walked in and saw everything, I was like, yeah, this is where I want to
be. This is it. You know? This is it.
Yeah.
Totally. And you know what? You also went to New York. You worked at another iconic music shop.
Yeah. I worked at D'Angelico for a while, and I worked at Manny's Music on 48th Street.
That's like the big music shop in
New York.
Yeah,
man.
Well, the crazy thing is, it's like, you know, it's really amazing that, you know, you worked in these shops because they were flagships.
Yeah.
You know, for luthiers, for musicians, for sure. It just became these stations where it's like you'd want to go create, or you'd want to find more about instruments or pickups, or
a big hang too back in the day for all the musicians when they were on tour and stuff and playing the city. You know, that's where they went, man, to get their stuff, their gear, and then hang out.
And now you're at another iconic music shop.
Yeah, with McCabe's. That way, man.
With me, and McCabe's is like, you know, McCabe's is one of the shops that I think I went when I was really starting out early in the game. Yeah. And it's just like this, it's like a magic shop to me. It's like you walk in, it's got this folklore about it. Totally. It's got all these interesting instruments. You can get exotic acoustic instruments. You can get world instruments. There's all these crazy things. I remember the guitar on the handle of the door. It's like I knew I was going to love that place as soon as I opened the door.
Yeah,
so now you're at another iconic place. I just saw a special on it on Spectrum News. They did a whole special on McCabe's, which was amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Just like, man, Jody, like he works at he's worked at all the most impressive music shops in the country.
The universe is taking care of me, man, that way for sure.
Well, you're a good soul. Now you're making creative music and creative endeavors and making your own stuff. Tell me about this new project, The Crummies.
Oh, it's not new. I've been doing it for a while, man. I started doing that in 95 was when my first kind of inspiration for that came around. You want to know how I started? I'd been to, they used to have these record conventions, Infinity Record Conventions, and I'd been to one of those and picked up an old Archie's record, and I was like, man, I forgot how much I loved the Archies, you know? So I got the Archie's record and started listening to it, and it just, man, it's just something clicked. And I'd always wanted to start a project, but I just didn't really have any idea of what, you know, format or genre I wanted to do it in. And
that's always going to change, too, you know?
Yeah. I have so many different influences and so many different, you know, styles of music, and you always hear, you know, well, you don't want to mix genres together. You need to have something that's accessible to people.
Nah. Well, I think that's the best when people do that.
Well, that's the way I looked at it, man. I was like, I'm going to do like a cartoon band where I can just do everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just do every kind of style that I want. I don't want to have any boundaries or rules. And it's probably going to be really crappy, but so I'll name it The Crummies. And so that was my
But it's not crappy, let's be honest.
Well, just starting out, I'll tell you what, the first record that I recorded, I saved up money and got this Fostix DMT-8 hard disk recorder, and it was my first attempt at really recording something, you know, clean, and it was pretty crappy, man, the quality and everything, but the songs were good, I thought, and I still listen to them, even, you know, with that production, but my production's gotten better and better. I'm at kind of decent demo quality production now.
I think you're better than that, man. You know the funny thing is, it's like, you know, the greatest part about music is you never really master it.
Yeah.
I think there's always ways. As soon as I start feeling like I'm getting good at something, you see another person that is just a wizard at it, and you're like, oh, they're doing it a little bit differently, and I have so much more to learn. It's one little pivot. It's one little thing that you think you have a handle on it, and it's like you see this other vast expanse of what it can be, and you realize, but I think that's why we love it. I think that's why we keep honing in on the talent and getting, you know, kind of juiced by it. You know, it's like a kick in the gut, but it also inspires our hearts to kind of like keep pushing and keep trying and keep swinging the bat. It's like, you know, I think with songwriting too, it's, you know, I always feel when I write, it's like, it's not always going to be a home run. Sometimes you just need that single. Sometimes you're going to strike out when you just get up there and try to write something. But it's important just to be that consistent, that you know exactly how you're going to approach it, and you know that you can approach it and make something. Because at the end of the day, that's the most important.
Well, I always felt like when I started writing with my project, The Crummies, I always thought, I'm just going to do whatever I feel,
you
know, and if it's good and it sounds great, then I'll try to flesh it out and make it into something. If it's not, then at least it's out of my system.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I think you kind of have to cleanse your...
Totally.
Your system.
It's therapy, too.
Yeah, it's therapy. Yeah, totally. And you learn. You figure out what you do like, how to approach things. And.
Well, I love the name, first of all. It's super cool because it's super punk. It's like... It's got that like punk and folky kind of thing too, you know.
Well, I came up with it when the Ramones were still together, man, and I was still getting to see them live, and so that was kind of my thing. I was going to be like the punk rock Archies, you know, or whatever. Which I had no idea the Dickies and all these other bands had already done that many years ago. But anyways, whatever.
But I love you touched on something I wanted to talk about. I love your passion for the Ramones. Because it's like, there's some of the best songwriters in rock and roll, in music.
Yeah, and
they write little, like, perfect, nutty cluster appetizers of songs. Sometimes they're, you know, Blitzkrieg Pop, which is like, that is an avalanche of a pop tune in this little breath mint of size. You know what I mean? It's just like, that's what I love about them. They're explosive, they're big, but all the songs are arrangement. There's nothing excessive. There's no
self-indulgence.
No indulgent, nothing. It's just like, we're going to write a great tune and we're out. And it's like every time they write something or record something, that's their approach.
Yeah. They definitely had a vision, you know, of dialed in exactly what they wanted to do, and they did it. They did it to better than anybody, I think, you know?
I think Rock and Roll High School is how I got introduced to the Ramones.
Yeah, that was the first thing I knew of just because it was popular, you know, but... It was well after that I discovered them and how great they were. You know, I came into them late in life, but I'm glad I got.
It's one of those things where it's like, you once you find them, and it's like, holy shit, you know. Man. I met Seymour Stein, who signed the Ramones.
Wow!
And every time I've met him two or three times at conferences, and it's like anytime he talks about the Ramones, you know, it's just like, you know, you're listening to his like history. Like, he'll tell you a story about how they were on tour, or they played, you know, in New York, you know, at these small little clubs, you know, and, you know, CBGBs in the 70s and 80s. That was their, you know, stomping grounds. And like, just hearing that he was there for that, and he signed them, and why he signed them, he was like, it was the most like, what is this experience seeing and hearing a band? I'm like, that's what music is kind of lacking today. It's kind of like lacking that personality in some ways, where it's like these fierce songwriters or musicians are making stuff and it shakes people up enough to get attention rather than it being so commercial. You know what I mean?
Well, definitely like commercial music today, but it's just so all over the place these days. It's out there, man. It's just, you know, you just have to find it.
Well, I love that you do that too. You definitely go through. I see all your Facebook posts and you and I will text. You've taken me some cool shows too. You're always looking, your finger's on the pulse for something melodic, something creative, something under the radar, something that's up and coming, maybe something that has been around for 15 years that is still under the radar. Yeah. And I love that about you, because you really know that your hunger and passion for music is there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, that's what brings me joy in life, you know, and I think a lot of people get to 52 years old and lose sight of what makes them happy, you know?
Right.
I just try to stay in touch with, I know that makes me happy, you know, so I try to give back if I can, you know.
Speaking of music, what do you want to play first?
Shoot, what you got?
I've got the Crummies Dreamer, Crummies Out of Time, Crummies Faded Away.
Let's try Faded Away first.
Man. All right. Here are the Crummies Faded Away.
I just had a dream. It just can't be about you. See, the end was near. It split us in two. The things that made me alive and kept you with me, they stalled out and faded away. I couldn't seem to find a single thing in my mind to make you believe it'd be okay. Now the end is here. I just can't live without you. I hope it's just a dream, and I hope that you do too. The things that made me alive and kept you with me, they stalled out and faded away. I couldn't seem to find a single thing in my mind to make you believe it'd be okay.
That trancey synth. What is that?
That's I don't even know what that was, man.
Is it kind of one of those things you stumbled on it and you were like, that's going on the track?
It's actually my QS6, Elisa's QS6 keyboard with, I think I have an analog synth card that I used, one of the cool old analog synth sounds.
I always love finding a synth that's just like screams, hey, you need to hear me now.
Yeah.
And that's one of those synths where it just says, yo, I've got style, I've got grace, I've got, you know, I'm going to just kind of kick open the door and you're going to hear me. And then you wrap your whole tune around it. There's so many songs that do that.
That,
you know,
was my inspiration from Georgie Girl, man. You remember the song Seekers, Georgie Girl?
Yeah.
Has a little synth in it. Yeah, I always liked that. And I was really into Puffy. Do you know those? The girls from Japan.
Yep.
Yeah. So I was really into them.
Actually, I only know them because of how much you love them.
Oh, yeah.
So you kind of turned me on to them.
Okay. So, yeah. So I was really heavy into them when I wrote that song. So that was...
Well, it's cool because it's kind of like, it's got like a Japanese pop vibe.
Yeah.
But it's also got like, it's got like a Ramones, kind of meets the Go-Go's, kind of meets a Japanese pop, you know, sound.
I'll take all that.
Yeah, and it's awesome. I love it. It's very, very cool.
Thanks, man, it almost
has like a Meat Puppets kind of vibe too, man. Do you like the Meat Puppets?
Yeah, Meat Puppets are great.
Yeah, you definitely have that vibe. And you do that concise thing, man. No guitar solos, nothing crazy. You're like, I'm just going to record the song, that's it. Tell me what your process is when you write and record.
When I write and record, well, it's different every time. Sometimes I get kind of in a, usually it's with guitar, but sometimes I get in a little bit of a slump, and I'll start off with keyboards or bass. I've written a lot of stuff on bass first, which is...
That's awesome.
I would have never thought I would do that, but well, bass lines come to me, and then coming at it, trying to write a guitar part over a bass line just puts me into a different perspective.
Well, it drives music. It's the most important.
Totally, man. Yeah, and it, yeah.
That's all. And you know what? What's awesome about that is a lot of music and pop music right now is being driven by bass lines.
Oh, yeah.
And like more so than a lot of, like, I feel like the 70s was like big with that, and the 80s kind of didn't do it as much, and the 90s too. But now it's becoming so big where the bass line, there's some like big pop tracks where it's just a drum beat and a huge bass sound and maybe a light synth and the vocal. Yeah. And it's like, I love that because it's my favorite instrument. It's still, it's the instrument that I think is the most important in a band because it's rhythm and it's melody too at the same time. Totally. It also can change the chords of everything in a chord, you know, completely.
The yeah, sound, breaks out all the, yeah, the complexities of chords and stuff. Yeah, totally.
So you prefer writing on bass?
No, not necessarily. I just, sometimes it's just makes sense, you know. I like writing on everything, you know, for whatever I can.
What about lyrics? Like, do you think about life? Do you think about love? Do you think about politics?
Well, the whole thing that I was kind of coming from on the Crummies when I first started, that was me and my friends would always, you know, we just had these, like, Southernisms you'd come up with. My mom would always say, Can't Can Never Do Nothing, you know. So I wrote a song called Can't Can Never Do Nothing.
That's
and,
awesome.
You know, and you torment me to death. She would always say that. You know, you kids are tormenting me to death. So we'd write a song called You Torment Me to Death. and just stuff like that. So there's just Southernisms for my inspiration a lot of times for lyrics. But then I kind of grew out of that and then just started to hum parts, you know, hum melodies and start making words up as I was humming. And it just starts coming to me like that. And I know a lot of people do that. I didn't realize a lot of people, it just,
I do that all the time.
Yeah.
I'd still do that. It's still one of my favorite ways to write.
And it's funny how the lyrics will come to you and they really mean a lot to you.
Yep.
No matter what. I mean, you know,
I find that it's like a meditation almost.
Yeah, it is.
It's like you're humming something and then like some spiritual kind of like experience happens where words or a word or a sound even just comes, it could be a phrase, it could mean nothing, but then it starts shaping into something, and then you like the way the sounds sound, and then those shape what you're gonna say.
Absolutely, man, and they fit into the rhythm of the song, and it's obviously coming from either your, you know, your subconscious or what you're, you know, what's on your mind at the time, you know, because it means, it's very meaningful to me, you know, when I write like that and then words start coming out, I start seeing what I'm feeling, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I always find that this immense gratification, not just with writing words or a melody, but also writing parts. I have, like, you know, sometimes a whole day will just be for that guitar line or that bass line or that drum groove or that, you know, that melody on the verse or whatever.
Right.
It's like, sometimes it's just about that, and that is enough for me to feel like, oh my god, that's the most gratifying part of my entire day.
Totally.
No matter if you're accomplishing other things in business or, like, you know, helping, you know, serve somebody else's goals for whatever, and that is like sometimes my greatest part of my day.
I agree, man.
Simple things.
Do you tend to like listen to those things over and over?
All the time.
That's the best. Me too.
I think it's the best. If you don't do that, then it's not good. Somebody told me something really great a long time ago. A guy named Dan White, who I used to work with at Guitar Center. He said, you know, write music you want to listen to. And I was like,
right.
Oh, that's so it.
Yeah.
Right there. That is so it. Whether you're emulating a style or an artist that you love, write something that you want to hear and make it find a niche that is undiscovered, unexplored, and don't be afraid of it being alone in the outfield, because it will find listeners, it will find people, and that's the hardest thing. It's like you want things to be accessible, but none of it really matters. It just matters that it's created and it's out there, you know what I mean? So it's like, I love when artists are creating so many different styles and coming at creative the process in such a totally unique way, you know?
I agree, man.
What about lyrics? What do you think about when you're thinking about subject matter? Do you kind of think about it? Is it premeditated or is it in the moment? Is it changed from song to song?
No, it's generally never premeditated. It, like I said, you know, I'll hum, you know, a melody and words will start coming to me, and as the words come to me, the subject of whatever the song's going to be about will come about, you know, within those words somehow.
Kind of like shaping a guitar neck, huh?
Kind of like shaping a guitar neck, yeah. It all starts coming together at a point, you know, and you start understanding. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I learn kind of more about myself in that way because I'm like, wow, why am I thinking about this? Or, you know, this is really cool. I've always wanted to express this feeling but never had the words, and the words just kind of came to me, you know?
So yeah. Let's play something else. What do you want to play next?
Let's do Dreamer. Dreamer's kind of my philosophy on my own band. This is on the Crummies. That's...
All right, here's the Crummies with Dreamer.
Been sitting here too long, thinking about a song. I guess I'm just a dreamer. I love to get a show, but it'll never go. Spirits get weaker. I find myself sitting.
Dude, holy shit, man.
Wow. This is the most people that's ever clapped for my music.
Dude, that was awesome.
Thanks, man.
Okay, I got to tell you something. We haven't gotten to the other two yet. That's definitely got to be your lead-off single, man.
Yeah?
Oh, my God. Dude, it screams Ramones. It screams Beatles. It screams Beach Boys.
Wow.
But it's like this perfect swarm of all three. I love the mix. Love the guitar parts.
Thanks, man.
Man,
Thank you so much. You did some cool stuff
on the strums. Great guitar solo.
Yeah.
Love the melody.
Totally ripping Steve Jones off on that guitar solo at the end. And Chuck Berry.
Yeah, I heard the Chuck Berry licks towards the end, man. I was like, ah, there it is. You know, I had a drummer once tell me, he's like, you know, Chuck Berry's cool and all, but, you know, it'd be so much cooler if he wasn't playing so many Chuck Berry licks. And he was just joking, like, because it's, you know, he makes his signature.
Yeah.
But I love that you put all your influences in this. This is what
That's what I try to do, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Dude, this... Great song. I love it.
Thanks, man.
That I definitely was just like, I don't know if it was just like the crunchy guitars that just kicked the door open from the top, but man,
cool.
That just kick-started it off, man.
Thanks,
it was just
man.
Like, yeah, man. And you touched upon the Ramones, but it's like, I see it. I hear it in that, you know? It's like, what a contrast from the other song, too, man.
Oh,
I love
it. Yeah. Thanks, man.
I always wonder, like, you know, with the Ramones, it's like, you know, when you make a song kind of in this style, it's like, how do you not want to make every song like that? You know what I mean? But they're all going
to
be different.
Well, I do want to make them all, but I try to just, I don't know. A lot of my stuff just comes natural too, like, so they don't always fit in that.
Let's get into some guitar nerd stuff.
What were
you playing through?
On that, what was I playing?
What was your guitar tone on that?
Oh, my guitar tone on that was... I had a Jackson 412 cabinet with a Jackson 100-watt tube head that I mic'd up. And I don't remember exactly what other amps that I used, but I doubled the guitars on everything.
Strat? Telly?
Sounded
like a Strat.
No, I don't play Strat.
Oh, then what
I
was it?
I don't play Strats for whatever reason. I just don't. It was a Gibson, probably Most Right. I've got a couple of Most Rights.
Dude, it sounded so good, man.
Yeah. I guess, you know, let's get that Johnny Ramone sound.
Yeah, totally.
But it's, you know, single coil P90 pickups on that. Through, you know, and I'm sure there were humbuckers too. I'm sure I used a Les Paul as well to kind of give some contrast.
Do you remember how many guitar tracks you used?
Not
just
many.
A stereo track, or did you do like layers?
Oh, I layer it, but usually what I'll do is I'll record one guitar on one track, and then another guitar on another track with a different amp, different guitar, pan them a certain amount, not always the same. Sometimes I'll hard pan all the way. Sometimes, you know, whatever.
I love how you layer those.
Whatever sounds best, you know.
I mean, there was just, you know, you can't do every song like that, yeah. Which is what made it so cool, because it was just like, it was gritty and it was in your face.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this too. When you're writing these songs, is it in chronological order that you're kind of recording them, or is it like years apart these songs are being written and recorded and
worked on? No, it's all pretty chronological. Yeah, each CD that I've done, these are all off the last CD that I've given you, except for the last song that you'll probably. Are you going to play all four?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
Hell yeah.
The last one that you'll play, that's one I collaborated with some people in New York. And we wrote the music, and a friend of mine, Lou, wrote the lyrics and sang it. And,
well, let's get to another track. What do you want to play next?
Yeah, let's do let's do that one that I was just talking about with Lou. It's called Dream Girl.
Dream. I have The Creeps. Is that it?
The Creeps. Yeah, there you go. That was the name of our project, but the song's called Dream Girl.
Okay, here it comes. The Creeps. Guitar tone is so insanely good.
Thanks, man. I do have to say, though, that was recorded by a buddy of mine, Serge Especia, in Brooklyn, in Greenpoint, at his studio, Tiny Thunder Studio. That was not me recording that. That's hence the great production on that.
Well, dude, I love the guitar line. Thanks, I love man. All the, like, I mean, it was so hooky and poppy. I love that little, like, you had like this 80s synth. Yeah, that was doing a cool line. That was my MS-20 awesome.
Mini. Those they re-released those a few years ago, and I got one. And it might have been a bad idea because now I can just sit up nights for 4 or 5 hours just turning knobs and listening to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's one of those kind of addictive.
But did it cut through in such a cool way man? It was so awesome.
Well, I'm always going for that kind of mini Moog lead sound. You know,
dude, it was a little bit like Hole, a little bit like the Go-Go's. Man, you got a lot of that '80s. Girl group stuff that I love.
Yeah, Lou's great.
The Bangles, and it's got a little. I don't know if you know a group from England called Transvision Vamp.
No.
But they were one of my first, they're like punk and pop. They use this kind of. They melt them together.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So cool. Out. Such a great infusion of sounds.
Thanks.
Awesome.
Yeah,
it's like power punk pop, dude.
Yeah, it's just an extension of the Crummies, you know. I mean, I feel like if I ever put out like a compilation or something of all my stuff that was well produced, went into a real studio and recorded it, you know, that would definitely end up on it.
Now, real quick, you've actually set up two of my guitars. You set up my Jazzmaster and you set up my Paul Reed Smith.
Yeah,
you are an excellent guitar tech.
Thanks, man.
And you're an outstanding person. If people want to find you to set up their guitars, should they come to McCabe's?
Yeah.
So do you have an email address you want to kind of announce? Or
there's really no email. Just come to McCabe's or give me a call at McCabe's Guitar Shop. And
that's in Santa Monica.
Santa Monica. I'm there Monday through Thursdays.
As for Jody Hill.
That's for Jody Hill.
Right?
Yeah, I'm there, man.
Well, let's play this last track. What are we going to play? We're going to play Out of Time?
Out of Time,
How
of
perfect is that?
For the end. Yeah,
dude, did you set time. That up on purpose? Because that's perfect.
I kind of did.
All right, man. We're going to play Out of Time, and then we're going to do a quick sign-off. All right, here's the Crummies, Out of Time. Dude, your guitar tune. Let me say that again. I'm tongue twisted because your guitar tone is out of this world, dude.
Oh, thank you.
For that style of music too. It is it. It is the character. It's balls to the wall. It's man. It is everything right. It's EQ'd right. It's mixed right. Your songwriting is phenomenal.
Thanks, man.
You got to come back. We're going to have you back, Jody.
Love to, man.
I want more tunes from you, man. We're going to collaborate, too. You heard it on the radio. Jody and I are going to collaborate with some music.
Absolutely.
So we're going to have to release some stuff. That's going to be high five. We're going to seal it with a high five.
For sure.
Well, dude, on behalf of Ronan, myself, Eddie Pence, and Sam at the radio station, we're going to give a shout-out to Sam, too. My name's Nikki Krula. We'll see you guys here next week. Thanks, Jody.
Thank you.